The sports desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Brandon Batista, give me the rock. Here it goes. Up, up, and away. Slam jam, bam. And now he does a little dance.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Wednesday, October 20th, 2021. It's my official duty to welcome you into episode 223 of the Buckeye Extra Men's Basketball Podcast. Welcome to Jubilation City. Right here off the top, I want to encourage everyone listening, please send your best wishes and your thoughts and your prayers to a man whose voice is in the podcast intro. That's our guy, Dick Vitale, who's entering his second battle with cancer. He announced this on social media earlier this week. And if there's anyone who deserves all the love and support they can get after all the good that they've done over the years, fighting cancer and raising money for childhood cancer awareness and just all the things that Dick Vitale does to try to impact people's lives positively, man, that's a guy that needs everything that he can get to hopefully get through this and beat this. So, Dickie V, I don't think you're listening to this, but if you are, please get well soon and know that we're all thinking about you. Now, for this week's episode of the podcast, I'm going to bring on a guest. We're going to be joined here in a moment by NBC4's Whitney Harding. You hear me talk all the time about my thoughts on the team and what I'm working on and things I'm doing. So I thought I'd bring in someone from a different medium who also covers the team. So Whitney was one of the hardest working people that I saw at Ohio State Basketball Media Day this year. She was there lugging her camera around, trying to talk to as many different people as she could. Just one of my favorite people in Columbus media. She covers everything. And she has a very special place in her heart for basketball, as you'll hear as we get into the conversation here in a moment. And it was just a joy having her on. Love getting some perspective from someone else who cares about the sport, someone else who covers the team. And I think you're really going to enjoy that. So that interview is coming up here in a couple of moments. Before we get to that point, I want to point out on dispatch.com, BuckeyeExtra.com, the preseason power rankings continue. I hope you've been enjoying these because, like I mentioned last week, they're a lot of fun to put together. And I try to put a lot of really random little nuggets all throughout them so you can have your best understanding of who these guys are as the season gets underway. We're counting them down backwards from 15 to 1 leading into the exhibition game against Indianapolis that is in 12 days. 12 days from now, I'll be recording a podcast, hopefully from Value City Arena, if they don't kick us out right away. I don't know what the protocols are going to look like this season, but I'll be recording a podcast one way or another that night, breaking down having watched Ohio State play against somebody else. And we are getting dangerously close to the start of the season. So the final preseason power ranking will run on Friday, October 29th, because I'm running every weekday. When you wake up in the morning, there's a new one. So with there being 15, that takes up three straight weeks. The final one will run on the 29th. Here's the ground we've covered so far, and I'd be curious if you have any thoughts on this. It starts at, I had Kalen Etzler at number 15 because he's redshirting, Harrison Hookfin at 14, Seth Towns at 13 because he's obviously dealing with the injury, Gene Brown III at number 12 coming off of COVID in the spring, number 11, Jimmy Sotos, number 10, Joey Brunk, number 9, Cedric Russell, and number 8, which just published this morning, Malachi Branham. So these are the guys that I'm putting them in order of projected impact on the season. This is who I think is going to have the most pronounced impact on what Ohio State is able to do this year. So I'd be curious for your thoughts. Send me some, let me know what you think, and we'll continue to count this down. And hopefully you're learning a thing or two about these guys as we get into the start of the season. Now, I want to remind you, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google, and wherever else you enjoy the finest of podcasts. We are 12 days from that first exhibition game. And when you subscribe, you'll automatically get the newest ones as soon as our man, Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, is able to publish them. While you're subscribing or downloading, please leave a review. Please click 5 stars. And please consider telling a friend. Thank you to everyone who has taken the time to do that. We're actually, I looked before the podcast, we're at 99 reviews. So someone get us to 100, preferably with a 5-star review. Please don't just throw a terrible review just to get us to 100. That would defeat the purpose. But thank you to everyone, again, who has taken the time to do all that. And thanks for always listening to me begging people to validate our work. So we have some rankings to get into here. On Monday, we got the first Associated Press poll of the year. Ohio State, as you surely know by now, came in at number 17 in the country. The Buckeyes were number 21 in last year's preseason poll and 18 in the year before that. And that was in 2018, 2019. That was the first time Ohio State had been ranked in the preseason poll since the Buckeyes were ranked number 20 in the 2014, 2015 poll. So three straight years now of that, of being a top 21 team. I guess as Titus and Tate would say on their podcast, that's the Big Ten stat of the day, that Ohio State's been a top 21 preseason team for three straight years. But at any rate, that is, that's where they sit right now. What do you think? I posed this question on Twitter, and I got a pretty good number of responses, and it was 7% of the replies said that that ranking is too high, 54% said just right, 38% said too low, and 1% said Frank Stallone. Rest in peace, Norm MacDonald. I had to throw that one out there. I love Norm. He's my favorite comedian. And obviously he passed away here recently. So I had to give a little nod there in the poll question. It's hard for me not to just throw Frank Stallone into every poll question I put out there. I realize only a very small percentage of people will get the reference, but if you grew up watching Weekend Update with Norm MacDonald, like I did, hopefully it made you chuckle. So that's what the general consensus was on where Ohio State sits in the poll. Had a couple other rankings come out this week. Ohio State is number 8 in KenPom's preseason rankings, which admittedly don't, it takes a couple of games for things to really kind of level out and for teams to fall where they should. But it is interesting looking at right now Ohio State. Now the projected record is basically the sum of all the probabilities. So it doesn't add up exactly to if you go game by game and count the results. But Ohio State's projected record is 21-9, and the Buckeyes are projected to go 13-7 in the Big Ten. Now, if you go game by game, Ohio State is not projected to lose until it goes to Purdue on January 30th. So I think that's like a 19-0 start that's projected for Ohio State. If we're sitting here and Ohio State is undefeated going to Purdue on January 30th, like, get me the book deal. I mean, I think it's going to be a really good team. I think it's going to be a really strong season. I don't think Ohio State will be 19-0 going to Purdue, but the Buckeyes are projected in every single game between the start of the season and the end of January. Now, there are a couple of toss-up games. They're projected to win 76-75 at Xavier, given a 50% chance to win that game, a 55% chance to beat Kentucky on a neutral court in the CBS Sports Classic in December. That's also forecasted as a one-point game, 51% chance to win at Indiana on January 6th. That's also a one-point game. Surprisingly, 56% chance to win and only a one-point win at Wisconsin on January 13th. I don't think Wisconsin is going to be that good. I don't think that will be as close as Indiana and Kentucky and Xavier, but that's where some of these projections are falling right now. We'll see. I'm very, very interested to get this thing going and start getting some answers here. We also had Andy Katz at NCAA.com has Ohio State at number 12 in his preseason power rankings. And he just said, quote, Kyle Young is healthy and will be a difference maker. Sam Vecenie over at The Athletic has EJ Liddell, projected to go at number 39 in next year's NBA draft. So that's a significant boost. There was a list on ESPN last week that had EJ as like the number 98 draft prospect in the class. But you would be hard-pressed to find someone who is more knowledgeable about the NBA draft and making a more accurate draft projection than Sam Vecenie. That dude just pumps it out. I mean, his work is incredible. So maybe a baseline here as we start the season for EJ Liddell, number 39 on Sam Vecenie's mock draft for next year. And finally, there's a secret scrimmage coming, and I'm doing secret in air quotes here because it's that weird NCAA rule where you can't publicize or you can't publish stats and things like that from these quote unquote secret scrimmages. But I was able to break the news this past weekend that Ohio State will play Ole Miss in Nashville this Sunday. The Buckeyes are basically going to take training camp on the road for like a day or two, just a way to kind of mix things up and maybe do some more bonding and just get away from the grind of the preseason, which I think is relevant on a team that is as experienced as this team is. Just getting guys, you know, so it's not just the same old thing of, okay, another training camp or another preseason where it's just going through the grind. Freshen things up a little bit and give Ohio State a new look. I I think that playing Ole Miss, that's an interesting matchup. It's not something we would historically see. So why the Rebels? My understanding is Ohio State wanted a team that plays hard, plays multiple different styles, and is just frankly out of the ordinary compared to what the Buckeyes usually play. So there you go. Now we're going to give some love to the sponsors. And when we come back, Whitney Harding. You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. At Rosati Windows, their commitment to the customer has not changed since day one. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he appreciates each and every one of their customers. At Rosati Windows, they pride themselves on their very high standards of business ethics and customer satisfaction. They are accredited with an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau, a top business with Consumer Choice, and voted by Central Ohio as the best in business in the window category with the Columbus Dispatch. The list goes on and on, but it's important to point out that their customers voted for Rosati Windows for these awards, and it's why they can make a statement like, Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business.
All right, so we're joined now on this episode of the Buckeye Extra podcast by a friend of mine from here in the Columbus sports media and one of the hardest working people that I know out there. You can catch her on NBC4, where she's a sports reporter slash anchor, and her name is Whitney Harding. So Whitney, first off, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How's your Wednesday going?
Oh, it's going great. It's my Saturday, so this is a great start to the day, actually.
how does your work week get constructed to where Wednesday is your Saturday?
So, big surprise in Columbus, it all revolves around football season and this football schedule. So, because everything kind of builds to Friday and Saturday, those are the days that our entire department is working at the same time. And so it's kind of a revolving thing where we all have to make sure that most people are working on the days that are most important. So Wednesdays and Thursdays just happens to be the best days for me to take off. And actually, it's like that for a lot of sports people around the country in local sports news.
Okay. Yeah, I inhabit this different world where since they play basketball games on all kinds of random days of the week, like I don't really have a Saturday until like April. That's kind of how it,
yeah, right. And that's kind of how it felt for me when I worked in Louisville, because we were covering three Division I programs, all really into basketball, and the women's teams there were just as big as the men's teams at times. So yeah, I get that.
So you mentioned being in Louisville, and I want to back up a little bit and go a little bit earlier in your career, because I mean, first off, you're one of my favorite Columbus sports people to follow, because I often feel like outside of my specific beat, I often just like tune things out. I'm just like dialed in, and I might not recognize that like other things are happening in the sports world. And I feel like you do such a great job on Twitter of just bringing people into things with unique experiences and unique perspective. Like I thought that was especially true this past summer during the Olympics. I mean, your gymnastics coverage was as good as anyone anywhere. And
well, thanks.
Yeah. Well, can you tell us where your sports journey began? Because as your Twitter bio indicates, you're a retired athlete or former athlete, exactly how you phrase it. But you have a significant athletic background.
Yes. So it's funny that you mentioned the big word gymnastics, because that was my life for 17 years. I started when I was two, ended up, my mother always reminds me, you retired. Of course, as a former athlete, I'm like, I had to quit. But my mother is like, no, you had to retire. When I was 19, I injured my back pretty severely, not severely enough to where I can't function. But I still to this day have two fractures, and that's just kind of the beginning of what's going on. But I mean, when I started doing junior Olympic level when I was 10, 11 years old. So that's a lot of pounding on a body that's at the same time trying to grow.
Yeah.
And that's where that stemmed from. But I come from a family that is very into sports, especially on my dad's side. And everyone's either worked in the sports realm, constantly watches sports. And I'm an only child, and my dad grew up in that atmosphere. So when I was born, and most of my side is men, my dad was like, oh gosh, what am I going to do? I don't know how to handle this. I don't know what to do. So he just raised me to like the things that he likes, and that was college basketball. And my love for that, it just has always been there. I mean, gosh, there's pictures of me with basketballs in my hands as a little kid, and I never played organized basketball,
okay,
but I was always the girl at recess that the boys wouldn't guard, and I would just drain threes constantly. So they learned very quickly. You have to go. I was awesome at Knockout, by the way. I was a Knockout specialist.
Oh man, I haven't played Knockout in so long. I love
it's
that
so
game.
So great.
I love that game. That was one of my favorite things. At the end of a practice, sometimes we would get to do that, and sometimes our coaches would play. And you know, if you could knock your coach out, I mean, that was the pinnacle.
I get that. And my neighborhood was actually very, it sounds weird to say a neighborhood is athletic, but we were. We had three or four Division I athletes on my street of maybe 10 or 15 houses. There was me, and then one of my neighbors was a quarterback at Texas. Another one played for Texas Tech. And I feel like there was a fourth around the corner, but I can't remember. But so we all played sports in the street all the time growing up. And basketball was a huge one because my driveway just turned out to be the perfect shape for basketball games. So we were just constantly out there playing.
So, but you said you never really played it at like an organized level. Was that because gymnastics was just like the all-encompassing sport for you?
Yes, exactly. Okay. I mean, gosh, I remember, I think one of my middle school coaches even like said to me one time, you don't have to show up for practice, just show up for games. But we... once I was 8 years old, so that's third grade, I was going to the gym for gymnastics practice at 6 a.m. like two or three times a week for 2 hours, and then going back at night for like three more hours. And in the days we didn't do that, I was there for like 4 hours. I had practices on Saturday mornings. In the summers, it was like 3 days a week was 5 hours, 2 days a week was 7 hours. So, yeah, there wasn't. And then there was always the not being able to do anything else because I could get hurt scenario.
Right.
And that was one thing that I don't want to say disliked about my childhood, because clearly I liked it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it. But I wish I could have done more sports. And I really, oh, gosh, I'm going to pull out a soapbox here. I always say I carry around so many soapboxes. I really wish kids and athletes didn't have to focus on one sport so early. And I feel like that's a trend that has happened in the last couple of decades. And I wish we could break out of that.
Yeah.
Because it's so important for kids to play other sports to be good at the ones they love, I think. I'll put that soapbox away now.
Hey,
I'm sliding it away.
we allow all soapboxes on this podcast.
Awesome.
So you mentioned people going to Texas and going to Texas A&M. So you're from Texas initially?
I grew up in the Houston area, in a suburb called Woodlands, pretty well known for athletics and for sports. And then I ended up getting a full ride to North Carolina State for gymnastics, but my body just wouldn't hold up. And by that, I always say that I was broken. My body was broken and my mind was broken. I needed to get out of the sport. That's a whole other conversation for a different time and a different topic. But I'll just say I can really relate to what Simone Biles went through this summer.
Yeah.
Very, very much. But it was a blessing in disguise. I ended up transferring to SMU in Dallas. Got my undergraduate there. Graduated in the recession. Excellent time to look for a job in journalism. Best. That's sarcasm.
There's not many good times to look for jobs in journalism, unfortunately.
That's so true. It's true. But again, just kind of worked out. I ended up going to Northwestern, and truly that is where I found myself and I belonged. I fell in love with Chicago. I fell in love with the different elements of sports that I saw up there versus being in Texas, because it is so different. And I really got to dive in even more into certain sports, like even like basketball, that in Texas just has a different flavor. And it was cool. I remember I was doing a documentary at Simeon Career Academy, and the football team was who I was doing the documentary on. And they used to play pickup basketball with the basketball team.
Oh, wow.
And Jabari Parker was in high school then.
Wow.
So, yeah. So you just get to watch this kid. I remember thinking, God, he's going to be really good. He was all right.
So going back to like growing up in Texas and going to a couple different schools, how did college basketball remain a constant for you? What was it about the sport that had like a special place for you?
My dad. My dad is my best friend in the world. And oh my gosh, we text all day, especially during college basketball season. He's already been texting me a whole bunch because, so to go even further back, before I was born, my whole family is originally from Kansas. Most of them still live in Kansas City. And so growing up, that was where I would go for holidays. And it became a tradition. Every holiday we'd go, we would try to catch a Kansas basketball game. That was my dad's, like, life, like, blood growing up. And it's kind of a funny tradition at this point in my family. On my dad's side, we get it, like, a bunch of us, we get into Kansas, but we end up not going for other reasons. I've actually been accepted to the University of Kansas 3 times. and I haven't gone for one reason or another. My dad ended up wanting to be an Air Force fighter pilot or Air Force pilot, and that kind of drew him to a difference. He ended up going to Washburn because he'd heard about their ROTC, and it ended up not mattering. My grandmother got into Kansas and for different reasons couldn't go. It's honestly become this wacky tradition. So, I always joke, I'll go when I'm like 80 and get a degree in underwater basket weaving, and then I can say I did it.
Well, it sounds like you will join me then in my cause that, as everyone talks about conference realignment right now, I want Kansas in the Big Ten. I want to see.
I do too.
I want to get to go to Fog Allen, and I want to add a blue blood into the Big Ten. And I keep hearing from people that, you know, when it comes to conference realignment, you know, it's football and it's TV and it's all these things, but like, give me Kansas. I don't care what Kansas football looks like. I feel like the addition of Kansas basketball to the Big Ten helps the Big Ten. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly more than Rutgers and Nebraska have.
Every conference needs someone to hold the floor down. You know what I mean? And they can do that in football. It'll be fine. It would be fine. But I agree. I think it would just be such an invigorate, especially on that side of the Big Ten, you know, where they could play Wisconsin. I think it would be in Iowa. It just seems to fit well. I completely agree. I would love for them to join the Big Ten. And for anyone listening, if you've never made the trek to Fog Allen, you've got to go. I mean, having worked in Louisville, I mean, I have been to Rupp Arena so many times. I was recruited by Michigan State. So I've been to the Breslin. I've done all of those things, and I'm totally biased, but it's different. It's so different. And it's just an energy. But yet we used to try to go all the time growing up for a game, and they were always like little rinky dinks. Like, we went and saw Pepperdine, I remember one time. But those were fun because it was such a blowout. You would really get to experience the atmosphere of the excitement and all of that. But one of the greatest games I've ever seen in person was for my dad's, I want to say, 60th birthday. My mother and I got him tickets to what we thought could possibly be the last time Kansas and Missouri played each other.
Okay.
And it was at Fog. It was the 2012 season. And Missouri was blowing them out. I mean, it was embarrassing. It was like a 20-point lead. I've never seen the arena that, like, despondent. It was just like, oh my gosh, this is how it's going to end. KU came all the way back. Thomas Robinson made a crazy play at the end of regulation. It went to overtime, and KU ended up winning. And my dad and I have also went to the national championship game in 2008. That Missouri game might have been better.
I just pulled up the KenPom, like, they don't have the box score for that game, but they do have like the win probability chart, and that thing takes a drastic swing.
You're
right. It's the minimum win probability was 7.7% at one point, and they 87, 86 in overtime between two top 10 KenPom teams on February 25th, 2012.
It was crazy, and I remember watching everyone just run out of Fog. Everybody's so excited. Then you'd watch people get like half a mile or so down the road and just stop and put like their hands on their knees and breathe, because it was the most exhausting experience while not playing. None of us are playing, clearly, and we're just exhausted from screaming. But yeah, it's those moments and memories at that place. After my dad got his knee replacement, my gift to him was we went and we saw the Rules, and we spent an entire day. It was actually a Baylor game, so it was a good game. Yeah. But yeah, when you grow up with a family from Kansas, I mean, that's just in your blood. It just is. And so through my dad and through my family, and actually, like, as I've moved around the country for this job, everywhere I go, I've met Kansas friends, and we go to games. So when I lived out in Odessa, Texas, I had a group of friends out there who were from Kansas, and we would go up to Tech for games. And I mean, tickets would be like $10 because Tech was so bad. And we would, I mean, it's wild to think about that now because of what's happened there. So yeah, I've been to every single Texas college arena to watch KU, and that's been kind of cool too.
So you get to experience Kansas, you spend time in Louisville, and you get to be around all those programs there. You come to Columbus, and you get to start experiencing Ohio State basketball. And I understand sort of, you know, when you're talking Kentucky and Kansas, you know, that it might not exactly be apples to apples. But what experience did you bring, or what sort of mindset did you bring to coming to Columbus? And obviously you cover everything, but the opportunities that you have to cover Ohio State basketball, what was it like, I guess, getting started in Columbus and starting to try to get to cover the team, even though the pandemic happened? That didn't help.
Right.
But what are the early experiences like for you getting to Columbus and getting familiar with the program?
You know, I was so excited to come here for not just football, but for basketball. I know that while football rules around here, there is such a tradition with Ohio State basketball. I mean, good grief. Look at some of the people associated with this program historically. Some of the greatest names ever. So I'm such a basketball junkie. I know this stuff. I know that it goes so far back. I mean, it goes before, clearly, people think, oh, you're talking about Greg Oden and Mike. No, it goes so far back. And I was so excited about that. And I remember last year, before the tournament, we did like a stream. It was myself and my coworkers, Jared Smalley and Justin Holbrock, and we're talking basketball. And I'm sitting there, and I think I said on the stream, you know what? I moved here from Louisville. Who would have thought my first tournament I'd cover here, Louisville and Kentucky, neither is in the tournament, and here's Ohio State. You know what I mean? It was this wild thing. But covering this basketball team is something that I was extremely excited about, because the style that, I mean, every conference has a style, and the Big Ten style is a style that I have not been able to cover yet, where it's tenacious. It's hard-nosed, you know, and people make fun of that, like, oh, low score. Well, if you watched that Michigan-Ohio State game at the Shot last year, you cannot say that. That is one of the greatest games I had the privilege of being in an arena for. And I think that the Big Ten basketball is on this awesome journey right now, where it's still keeping that defense-minded, you know, power, you know, grunt game. But man, there are guys now that can shoot the basketball, and it just makes it for such a fun combination. And so I was really excited to come here to cover this team and Chris Holtman, who is a gem, and all of these awesome players here for Ohio State basketball and the women.
Yes.
So excited to cover the women as well. I know the tradition that's there.
So you get here, and like we said, last year was a rough year to try to get to cover a program. But we did have an actual media day this year, and you were one of the people there too, who was running around trying to get every player, like I was, and you know, carrying your camera around and setting it up. And I mean, doing all these things that I don't have to worry about. I'm just trying to talk to guys. What was media day like for you this year? What did you take out of getting to try to talk to as many players as you could, and actually doing some face-to-face stuff? What did you get out of Media Day this year?
Yeah. Oh, I love Media Day, because you get to take a minute to ask some of the weird questions that you wouldn't be able to ask otherwise. And one of my favorite moments I had this year was when I walked up to Joey Bronk. I was so excited to walk up to him one-on-one because the first thing I said to him was, Joey, we've done this before. And he kind of looked at me and I said, because when he transferred to Indiana, fun fact, living in Louisville, we cover IU.
Wow. Okay.
So, yes, because Louisville is right on the border of Indiana and Kentucky. So, Indiana, there's some towns in the viewing area. I would drive up to Bloomington and cover games for basketball, especially. And actually, the only Indiana football game I've ever covered was against Ohio State many years ago. So, when Joey transferred to Indiana, I was at Indiana Media Day. And I talked to Joey one-on-one. And so that was what I said to him at, you know, inside the Ohio State Media Day a few weeks ago. I was like, we've done this before. And I told him, and he said, oh, my gosh, I remember you. I mean, I was, I think, maybe one of two women there, so it's not hard. But, yeah, so that was a cool moment for me. And getting to talk to Joey, he's such a great person to chat with. Because talk about somebody who knows the game of basketball.
Yeah.
That guy just, wow. And it's going to bring such a different element to this team this year, but I digress.
that's really cool though, that like you would have a connection with somebody like that from years ago that, you know, college basketball is always interesting to me because I feel like the longer you spend around the sport, you realize everyone kind of is connected in a weird way. And it's like that.
Yes.
It's like the Kevin Bacon 5 degrees of separation or whatever, that like everyone's five people away from being like knowing Kevin Bacon. It's like college basketball is kind of like that, where the longer you're around it, the more you realize you kind of know everybody.
Well, and look at Joey Bronk as a perfect example. And we talked with this, how this has just come full circle for him. And I'm so excited for him. I want him to have such a great experience this year. And of course, it's going to be a huge help for Ohio State for the depth on in the paint. But I mean, to start with Chris Holtmann and to come all the way back and now be at Ohio State with Chris Holtmann. And I think Joey said that he hosted, was it EJ Liddell at Butler?
He hosted Kyle Young.
Kyle Young. That's who it was. I mean, you said it, 5 degrees and stuff. It's so true. I mean, it's just this wild thing because I don't think people realize that how many of these guys know each other from hosting visits. And you meet other people on visits. And, but yeah, so Media Day, it's just so much fun because you get to kind of ask these quirky questions to get to know these guys beyond, you know, points, assists, blocks, numbers, blah, blah, blah. Like, I got to chat with Zed Key about how he just likes to fix stuff for these guys.
Yeah.
And it was the best conversation. And then talking to all of them about it, because you learn so much about these guys' personalities and their connections with each other, because one conversation leads you to go back to a different player for another conversation. Then you bounce to the third guy for the conversation. And it's just, it's so much fun. And for people listening, I hope you know, the guys on this team are such great humans. And it makes it even more enjoyable to watch when you know that they are just so much fun to chat with and be around. And they are.
Yeah.
They're a cool group of guys.
It does make it more enjoyable when the people that you are talking to and interacting with and that are out there on the court are enjoyable people to have conversations with. And that when you have a press conference or when you have an interview, there is a bit of a back and forth and there's some just joy there. I think about when, so this is my seventh full season covering Ohio State basketball for the Dispatch. And when I started, I covered the last 2 years of the Thad Matta era, and it was, there were some really rough times in there. And I remember leaving interview sessions with like Mark Loving and Trevor Thompson where I heard one reporter say, did someone just die? Like when the press conference was over, because it was like the mood was just so dour. And I feel like there have obviously been some highs and lows here in these last couple of years. But I agree with you that there's a positive energy around a lot of these guys. And it does make going to a media day and going to an interview session a more exciting prospect, because you know you're probably going to get something decent and there's something to talk about with these guys.
And it starts at the top. I mean, it starts with Chris Holtmann. It really does. I mean, and I have covered, as I've said, so many teams. I've covered incredible Hall of Fame coaches. He is my favorite college basketball coach that I've had the privilege of being in a press conference with maybe three times. I mean, because everything's been on Zoom. But even on Zoom, he is just such a wonderful, like, conversationalist. And just the way he talks about the game, I could just sit there and listen to him talk about basketball for a while. And he's, I mean, it really, he does find a way to make it feel like you're the only two people talking. And that is kind of how it is with these players when you talk with them. And so it really is such a wonderful environment. And I get why guys want to come here. I get it. And it's going to get better and better and better. And this is, he's going to build this thing even into more than, and it's just, it's already a great program. I mean, preseason number 17, that's wonderful. I think they're going to get up even higher, big time. And it really does start at the top with him. And I would say it starts even higher than that with Gene Smith. So yeah, it really is a fun program to cover on many aspects.
So you just mentioned the preseason ranking. That was actually going to be my next question to you, that the Buckeyes,
yay,
are, they're 17th in the AP poll. We had them fourth in the Big Ten media poll that I help conduct every year. What do you think about this team's trajectory? What do you think, like, what are you looking to, what questions do you need to get answered as you look at this team getting ready to start the season? What are you curious about?
The biggest question, I think, is who is going to replace not just the talents of C.J. Walker, but the presence of C.J. Walker. I think that's the biggest question. I think they've gotten better inside because that was the question mark last year. And now, I mean, I said this to E.J. Liddell at Media Day. I said, are you excited to finally play your position? And he laughed and was like, I get to play the four. I mean, it's that to me is exciting. But it's going to be who can really be the C.J. Walker type of guy. I know everybody is worried about, you know, a lot of people worry about losing Dwayne Washington and losing the scoring. I'm not worried about scoring. They're going to score. We saw that last year. I think the question is going to be that leadership at the point. And there are so many talented guys in that, on that perimeter. It's just who is going to be the consistent one. And that really is my biggest question. I think that they've gotten better defensively, bringing in on the inside a Joey Brunk and bringing in a Jamari Wheeler. I mean, gosh, Jamari Wheeler, it sounds like, is already, you know, showing what he can do. I think I read an article by somebody who wrote about that. I can't remember who it was. I feel like I read it this morning. Oh, yeah. Nice job, Adam. But for me, it really is who is going to be the leader on the perimeter. That's my question.
Well, my favorite thing from, and thank you for reading, and thank you for mentioning that story.
I read.
my favorite thing in there was Holtman talking about, there was a play where Justice Suing was going to for a layup, and he said it was about 3 seconds before Justice realized that Jamari had already stolen the ball and was going the other way. He said Justice was going to lay up air, and Jamari had already stolen the ball. And it's interesting you bring up C.J. Walker. I was on 97.1 this morning. They were asking me about the backcourt, and they brought up C.J. And I feel like not much has been said about replacing him. The conversation has been about Dwayne this and Dwayne that. But I do think that leadership, and Dwayne obviously had a lot of that. We saw that wearing his heart on his sleeve. But you saw like how C.J. just kind of drove the engine a lot last year. And I think that it does make for an interesting situation this year where Jamari brings a lot of that. I don't think that Jamari, he's not, you look at his numbers, his assist rate is lower than what CJ's was. His turnover rate is higher than what CJ's was. He doesn't score at the rate that CJ scored the ball, but he gives you a lot of that leadership stuff. And then I think you have Amici Johnson who has a lot of that leadership as well. And I think has more of an offensive ceiling. And I'm just very fascinated how those guys maybe collectively fill some of that C.J. Walker role.
I am so excited for Amici Johnson. I mean, I think that, for one, he was amazing last year. Considering he was supposed to be in high school, the minutes he gave last year, incredible, incredible. And I am so excited to see him now in his true freshman year, but already with experience, how he's going to grow. And I think it was so wonderful for him to get to have those few months with C.J. Walker,
yeah,
and to get to work with him and to get that mentorship and all of, and with Dwayne. I mean, yeah, let's, we cannot forget the leadership that Dwayne had. I mean, he really did. I mean, he definitely had the best soundbite from last year was definitely when Chris Holtmann said, "I love Dwayne, but he's going to send me to an early death." It's hilarious. I mean, when he said that, I remember our sports office erupted in laughter.
Yes, yes.
Just because it was like perfect. Dwayne was the epitome of the no, 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 yes.
Yep. Yep.
But he was an amazing leader. Amazing. So I think it's huge that Michi got those months with those guys, and he can take that and move it into this year. And it's, I think he's going to be incredible. I'm so excited for him. It's going to be fun.
And you mentioned EJ a minute ago, and it is fascinating to me as we go through the preseason. I feel like there's so much talk about, at least, and I realize I'm falling into this trap a little bit. I've talked so much about the backcourt and this new guy and that new guy and this piece and that piece.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's easy to forget that Ohio State has a first team All Big Ten player who's returning and poised for an even bigger season. For someone who had, like you said, has covered some elite programs, when a player is coming back with those, with that kind of resume and then that kind of expectation as well, what do you look for from a guy who is going to now be the face of the program? I mean, I know he's one of four captains, but I think everyone's going to start with EJ Liddell when they talk about Ohio State this season. What do you think is key for him just maintaining that and taking that and embracing that in the right way?
Just enjoying to finally play the position that he is supposed to play. I think everybody forgets sometimes because he's just been so seamless. He's not a natural five, and he's had to at times for the last, especially 2 years, play that five. And he's done a great job. And so now I think it's going to be exciting for him to really open up his game, really be able to show he can step into a three-pointer. He doesn't have to immediately run down to the post. He can maneuver. He can show, more athleticism as far as stepping out, driving, moving around the court. I'm very excited to see that from him and excited to see his passing as well. I think it's an element that doesn't get talked about as much is playing the five has allowed, I think, him to have a different vision of the court. And so he has had to kick the ball out and things like that. Well, now he can position himself, receive those kickouts from a guy like Joey Brunk, who's also a fantastic passer from the post. I think that makes me so excited to see what he does on the inside-outside game. And Ohio State can really have that now, not just with the perimeter, but with EJ Liddell. He can play that mid-range game, which, okay, soapbox, dragging it out. The mid-range game is a lost art in basketball. Okay.
You're soapbox. Absolutely, we could have a whole podcast about that. You are correct.
I love the mid-range game so much. I think that's going to be so exciting for EJ to be able to play that kind of game and to be able to position himself on the court. I'm going to be excited to see that. A lot of times when you're watching basketball, it's what's happening without the ball that can be the most exciting, and that's what I'm ready to see from him this year.
I like the mid-range game so much more than the 1 foot inside the three-point line shot. When I play, I would get yelled at a lot, full disclosure, I was mostly a bench warmer, but when I played in high school, my shooting motion, I would kind of kick my right foot forward and I was constantly stepping on the line, and my coaches would yell at me that is the worst percentage shot because you're taking literally the longest two-pointer you could take. So either figure out how to stay behind the line or get 5 feet closer and take a jumper. So yes, I am with you on the mid-range game. I love a guy with a good mid-range jumper. And I think we'll see more of that from EJ.
I love a good Seth Towns shot fake.
Yes.
Get off the glass. John Wooden is up there, applauding in heaven. I mean, I love it.
Yeah. And I really hope we get to see more of Seth this year. I feel bad for that guy, for everything he's been through and for how much it means to him to play at Ohio State. I really hope we get, for his sake, we get as much of a full season from him as possible, because I think that's a guy that, I mean, you talk about earning it and deserving it. He's, oh, I mean, man, he's right there.
And getting it, and getting it. And we're talking about that leadership. I mean, that's a guy who is a born leader in so many aspects,
yep,
for this team. And I know he will be, even like when he can't play, he will be. But gosh, I'd love to see him be able to be that on the court as well, because you know he's dying for it.
Yeah. I told him, I did an interview with him this summer, and I told him that I legitimately think that someday I'm going to be writing some story about how he was at Ohio State and now he's the president. Like, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think mm-hmm. that's, he's got that kind of life trajectory ahead of him. And I'm just excited I get to write about this portion of it.
It's kind of like I said that about Simone Biles this summer. I think,
yeah,
you know, she's done so much as an athlete, but I'm so excited to see what she does next, because I think it could be more defining. I feel that way about Seth. He's been an incredible college basketball player, but I'm even more excited to see what he does afterwards, because I think that's going to be, he's going to be a defining person for, you know, not just for Columbus or Ohio, but for our country. I think he will be in some capacity for sure.
Well, yeah. Well, Whitney, I don't want to take up your entire Saturday here. So last thing for you here before I let you go and actually have a day off and not have to spend all of it talking to me. Where can people find your work? What sort of socials do you want to plug? I want to make sure that people know how to find your work and follow you however you want them to.
Oh, you're a gem. So I'm very active on Twitter. That's my favorite social media platform. So if you're on Twitter, please give me a follow. Please give me a conversation. I love chatting on Twitter. I apologize that right now you're going to probably be seeing a lot of like Astros snark, because I am an Astros fan.
I wasn't going to bring that up. I wasn't going to bring that up because I have my feelings about that. But I'll.
A lot of people do. You know what? Most Astros fans, I mean, we just kind of lean into it at this point. You have to.
Yeah.
You just have to. So, but I also, if you follow me on Twitter, you will learn I'm also probably one of the most critical of the teams that I like. So a lot of it is me making fun of my favorite team. So I enjoy a good banter. On Facebook, you can find me on Facebook as well. Whitney Harding NBC4, if you search that, I will pop up. And on Instagram, if you like pictures of corgis, that's where you find me on Instagram as well, Whitney Harding, and there's an underscore at the end, and you will see plenty of photos of my wonderful dog, Henry Higgins, who is sitting here right next to me. And Adam, I'm amazed he has not barked once.
Well, frankly,
I don't know how we've done this.
Frankly, I'm disappointed because aside from my dog, corgis, man, I love corgis. There's actually someone that lived down the street from me had two corgis, and they just moved out of the neighborhood, and I'm just devastated because I would occasionally just look outside and see corgis walking down the street, and it always made my day better. So
yeah. But yep, he is a handful. He is hilarious, and he is all over my Instagram. So, and on Instagram I do tend to, especially with my stories, I'll post what I'm working on, where I'm at, what I'm up to, that sort of thing. I try to hit all the platforms. Instagram and Twitter is mostly where I live. That's kind of, I find it to be the easiest to just post real quick and move on.
Right.
And have fun. But, and then my work, I usually try to post it there. Of course, our website, NBC4.com, go to the sports tab, and you'll see my work, and of course, Jared's and Justin's as well. All three of us have kind of our own style, our own specialties, and I think we all complement each other extremely well.
It's a great crew.
Shameless plug.
Well, Whitney, thank you so much for coming on here, and thank you for taking time with us on your day off. Look forward to seeing you at interviews and games and things, because the season is right around the corner, and I'm very excited for that, and I'm looking forward to actually more in-person things as this year actually gets started.
Yes. Oh, so excited. Thanks for having, if everybody's made it this far, thanks for listening. This was an absolute blast. It was, talking basketball on my weekend, there's nothing better. watching would be better. But we're almost there. We're so close.
Well, thank you again, Whitney, so much. I really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, Adam.
Yeah, have a great day. Thank you.
All right, so that's going to wrap up this episode here of the Buckeye Extra Podcast. Thank you again to Whitney Harding for coming on. You like she pointed out all the places you can catch her work. Love getting to get to follow her on social media and see her at interviews and things like that. I just think she's a great addition to Columbus media and really excited that she made some time on her day off to come talk some hoops with us. I have not yet gotten my new Coldplay album. It came out last Friday. And mine shipped on Wednesday, and I keep checking the tracking, and it just says, check back tomorrow for an updated delivery date. And there's nothing has happened. We're a full week into this, and I don't know where my album is, so I've not gotten to listen to it yet. I don't admittedly have the highest of expectations for it, even though I do love Coldplay and always will, no matter what direction they take. I will hopefully have some thoughts on it at some point for you, but God only knows when that's actually going to show up. It's frustrating when the band puts out an album, you pre-order it, you get from their website, and then as you're still waiting for it and it's just sitting somewhere, you get another email from the band saying, you can buy the deluxe version of the album now with some extra tracks, and here's how you order it. I'm thinking, please send me the first one. I'll think about the new one, which I would have bought in the first place, but can I get the other one first? Can we sort this out and figure out where the heck my album is? So that's my first world problem for the week. Hopefully that album will show up at some point. Been listening like crazy to the album by the Lathams that I picked up last week. They're a British band right in my wheelhouse, and was able with two other guys I know here in Columbus who are big British rock fans. We combined, we bought the album from their store, and then we were able to split the shipping so it wasn't cost prohibitive to get it. And it's some really good stuff. I cannot encourage you enough to go out and listen to the Lathams if you can. I'm really digging them right now. Now, as always, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardy@dispatch.com. Thank you, as always, for listening. Thank you to Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, for pushing the gears and making me sound better. And thanks to Whitney Harding for joining us on this episode. I will be back with you sometime early next week as we enter the final week of the preseason camp. So look for something early next week. Until we get to that point, thanks.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.